Hi, this is Artie Boucher from Denver, Colorado, and you've tuned into the IV Envy podcast, home of strong opinions and marginal analysis. So stay tuned, and let's let the guys talk for a second about the Chicago Cubs. Go Cubs!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this, the 420th episode of the IVMV podcast. 420 episodes. You guys have any stoner jokes to tell here to start this one off?
Fresh out, I told so many today.
Yeah, it's the first day back to school. You're all you told all the stoner jokes you've piled up over the summer.
All weed jokes.
So on this episode, we're going to talk about the series that the Cubs just wrapped up against the Miami Marlins, the sweep of the Marlins, and we will also briefly look back on Sunday night's crazy game, and we're going to look at how some of the top Cubs prospects in the minors are doing so far this year. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hi, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
So, guys, I have my my John Baker Day bobblehead right here. Can you guys see it? Is it in the camera?
No, yeah, behind you. Oh, there it is.
Here it is. Yeah. Mr. John Baker, it's a bobblehead.
Pretty cool.
Beautiful. It is.
Look at the back. It's got his number on the back. Name. Beautiful. It's gorgeous. And it's got
sweet.
It's got that writing right there, July 29th, 2014, the John Baker game. It's a great bobblehead. So I have this one, and then I have another one in a box over there across the room. And I'm going to do a drawing from all of our Patreon supporters and give it away later this month, the John Baker bobblehead. These are limited edition. The first batch was only 30 of them, and Anthony Rizzo has one. We'll assume it's in his locker in the clubhouse just because I don't know where else he would keep it.
I'm sure he has an expansive living situation. There's plenty of bobblehead storage areas or display areas.
I don't know. I'm not sure what his bedroom looks like. I don't know.
Has an expansive bobblehead display area in his bedroom, I'm guessing.
On his headboard.
So there's only 30. Rizzo has one of them. And so Danny from the Sun Ranto show, he's talking about making a second batch of them, ordering them. They're $50. So if you don't have $50 for a bobblehead and you want a chance at winning one of these John Baker bobbleheads, you can pledge on Patreon for just $1 a month, and then you'll be entered into the drawing. I should do that. You get as many entries as the dollar amount that you pledge. That would be, I won't do that. I'll just do everyone's on equal ground. But here's the catch. It's only active Patreon people. There's a lot of people who have had their cards declined on Patreon, probably because you haven't updated the cards when you got a new one. And that's fine. Yeah. What's that?
New chip and pin cards. You got to go back and update everything.
Yep. And that's fine. I mean, you know, we don't want you supporting this podcast to be a burden. If you are a Patreon supporter, and we assume that you want to support the podcast because you've already made the decision to do it. If you're a Patreon supporter, check your account because several cards are being denied, and you can find all of that at patreon.com/IVMV. So here in, I don't know, maybe like 3 weeks, we'll do the giveaway for the John Baker bobblehead, or maybe we'll do it in like a week. So maybe the winner will be at the weekend at the lake and I won't have to ship it. Maybe that's what we'll do.
So that's another catch. You have to give them Patreon and you have to come to the weekend at the lakes. Just kidding.
No. Okay, so before we get into anything else, man, how about that game? Well, how about that game on Sunday night? But then I almost feel like today's game was about as incredible. But let's talk about the Sunday night game. And I assume we don't need to go into too much detail explaining what happened, because if you're listening to this and you didn't watch it, if you turned it on because you thought that Mattis had just ruined it for the Cubs and 6-0 was a deficit the Cubs would never be able to come back from, and you turned it off, and apparently you've just been blacked out from Cubs news since then. They ended up winning the game, if you didn't know. But do you guys have any thoughts on that game?
I have a lot of thoughts, but I'm not sure where to start. Just the wildness of it all, and then like some of the moves that Madden made, and I mean Travis Wood, and then bringing Lester in to bunt, like just and having it all work out makes it all feel so amazing. Had it not worked out, it would have been like, what were you doing? But that's not how it went down. They won. So
yeah, and I think that's kind of what I took away from it, Kurt, was the fact that it worked out. And in games like Sunday night's game and the game in Cincinnati where Madden used multiple pitchers in left field, I kind of feel like these wins like that are just manufactured by Joe Madden. And you have him using pitchers in the outfield, and whenever he does something like that, he ends up looking brilliant. You know, like Travis Wood made an amazing catch against the wall, and everything that Madden did with the bullpen worked out. I mean, those guys pitched great. I think, man, Carl Edwards Jr. looked amazing. And I really hope that he's pitching in September and October like he is right now, because he is on fire. But that game was over. It was 6-0. The Mattis experiment was over. The DFA paperwork was probably being filed while he was still on the mound. And the Cubs just
early on.
Yeah, the Cubs just worked their way back in. The bullpen looked great. And then that last inning. Besides the plays, the individual plays and kind of how it all went down, like Madden just has this ability to look like a genius. And the funny thing is that when he does something, I guess you would think that situations like this and the game in Cincinnati, like how can anybody that's paying attention say that Joe Madden blew anything, you know, in any other game? Like, oh, well, they should have left, you know, Strope in there for one more out. And I just think like you have to be an idiot to not see how amazing of a manager he is, and that it works out more often than not, I guess.
Well, yeah, I can't remember a time where he did something crazy and it didn't seem to work out. And he kind of does have this like kind of mad scientist feel to his decisions, but they're all backed up by reasoning. Like there's sound reasoning behind everything he does. And so he just ends up looking good every time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's really interesting is whenever he does these kind of like crazy things, it's, man, can you guys hear all these kids screaming?
No, not at all.
Okay. There are a lot of kids screaming right now. I don't remember what I was going to say. It's just interesting to hear him talk about it afterwards, because you're right. He always has some he's never just like, yep, that's what my gut told me to do. My gut said this and that's what I did. He's always got very interesting, and it makes me appreciate him as manager because he shares so much. You know, there are managers out there that wouldn't feel the need to like kind of let the media and the public into every decision that he makes, but he doesn't really seem to like guard anything. And I think that's what I really appreciate, that because it helps me learn more about the game of baseball.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think that there's some intangible benefit to the players having fun with all this, because you could see even in the middle of it, they weren't even, you know, they were kind of making their comeback, and but they were having fun. Like, you know, after Wood made that catch and he came in, they're all goofing around. I do think that helps everybody stay loose, and they're not so concerned with, oh, we still have to do this. It's more about like we're playing the game. Not that I think that they're just aloof, but I don't know. I think it's hard to measure that kind of stuff, but when guys are having fun, which I think they do plenty of in this clubhouse, it seems like.
Well, I think that leads to them like just continuing to play hard until the end. And yeah, so these wins feel like Joe manufactured, but I would also attribute it to that they're playing loose, but they're also playing hard until the end. I mean, think about Contreras beating out the potential game-ending double play to keep the Cubs' chances alive. Or Wood, you know, getting up to 15 miles an hour to crash into the wall to catch that ball. It's stuff like that is also a huge factor.
Well, and I think,
is this the same game where Contreras made the sliding catch in the outfield too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Well, and I think that these guys have to be having fun with it. And I think in a way, as much as us fans are like, oh my gosh, what is Joe doing? Like, what's he gonna do now? I think these guys on the field feel the same way. And when I was at that game in Cincinnati, the extra innings game, where he had three pitchers playing in left field at different points, I mean, you could see that Rizzo was laughing. Like, as the Travis Wood was coming in from left field to pitch, I mean, the players were having a blast with it too. And so I think in a way, they enjoy. I mean, it's almost like, I would imagine in a certain way, like, they're looking at the bench and realizing that there's nobody to go to. And you know that these guys have to be like, okay, how we're going to win this one. How is it going to happen? And I think that, like, it's really good because it gives them a lot of confidence in these late inning games, knowing that your manager can outsmart any manager that, you know, so far that he's faced. And that's got to be a good feeling, you know, heading it late into the season and hopefully into the postseason.
And it just seems like they are able to maintain and summon energy a little bit more easily than the opponent when they're going into these long games because of the fun that they're having. I mean, look how fresh they looked in the celebration after the game, where Lester got a face full of powder of some sort, and then he got his jersey torn off.
Right, you can see the buttons popping.
They literally
popping.
Tore the jersey off of him in the celebration.
Lester has a lung infection now. He's got a lung full of rosin.
Yeah, and I think Schwarber did it to him.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I thought it was Rondon. But
I don't know.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, so let's talk about that last inning. First off, I seriously thought that the Hayward hit was a home run. I thought that was gone.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so excited that if there's a guy that probably needs that right now, it's Hayward. But, you know, is a great.
He was huge in that game. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we see him not come through in today's game. We got to remember, you know, times like that, because he was huge in that inning of that game.
Yeah. But so he's standing on second base, you know, and then he moves over to third. On a pop fly, and who, like, what manager would send John Lester and his .051 career batting average to the plate for his first career pinch hitting appearance? Okay, Lester has seven career hits, zero career RBIs, and then with two strikes, so he swings at strike two, and I was like, oh, he's swinging away. And then, no, he laid down a bunt. Not a great one. Luckily, it was to the glove side of the pitcher, and Hayward was able to get in there. But
I thought it was a pretty decent bunt. I mean, I wasn't like perfect, but...
Yeah, well, it was good enough. So, I mean, that's all that matters. Better than I could do. I mean, if he would have, like, pulled it towards first base a little bit more, maybe it would have, you know, given Hayward a little bit more space. But, I mean, it worked fine. But I tweeted this after the game. Like, could you see Renteria or Swaim or any of the previous Cubs managers over the last 20 years pull this thing off? And I just feel like as happy, I'm just really glad that we have Madden managing this group of players, because I mean, I can't think of a manager. I guess I just think of, like, okay, so say Madden wasn't available. I can't see anybody. It just seems like a match made in heaven. Like, this roster, this front office, and this manager. It's just so, it's beautiful.
You could see the divine architecture. The signs are everywhere.
there's this one part of me that's like completely in agreement, because it's like the last few days have been so good. And then there's another part of me that's like, oh man, can you imagine if it didn't work out? The flip in this conversation, but we don't have to. But at the same time, it's sort of like, I don't know. There's always that little part of my brain that's like the realist of.
But I still think, like, he has so much reasoning and behind what he does. I mean, I guess some of it's gotta be gut feeling, but it seems like he's able to justify pretty rationally these kind of madcap moves that he does.
Right. And eventually one of them is not going to work out.
Right.
And then that's when you will see people like, this guy is in out of his mind. He's gonna pull something like this, and then, you know, game seven of the World Series, and we're gonna lose it because of this buffoon.
But think about this, like, I mean, so the sending Lester out to take that at bat seems on the surface pretty crazy, but I mean, think about all the bunting that Maddon would have watched in spring training, and you know, he's seen Lester do it a ton of times, I'm sure, and so he had confidence based on his experience with having watched him, I'm sure.
Right, because he said if Hayward had been on second, then he would have sent Arrieta up to hit, but if he was on third, then he was going to send Lester up to bunt. And it's so much fun to watch, and it's so much fun to watch a manager who is just so creative and really intelligent. And yeah, it's not going to work every time, but I don't know, one of his sayings, he has 4,000, so I can't remember which one, but you know, there's one like something about the process, you know, like the idea is that, like, you do what you're supposed to do. You do what makes sense. And sometimes it works. Usually it works. Sometimes it doesn't, but you stick with that process, that you stick with that mental, you know, that approach that you're taking. So.
Yeah, and I think you also have to give him some credit for, like, knowing the bigger picture, too. Because, you know, in a regular season game when, yeah, this was for a series win, but it's a regular season game against the Mariners, and it's okay to take a gamble to try to pull this off and then sort of, like, build that momentum towards the future versus, right. Yeah, if you lose this game, you know, like, we probably all expected them to lose when it was the eighth inning or ninth inning.
Or the third inning.
Yeah, like, you sort of look at it and like, well, yeah, we lost that series, let's move on. But like, why not? You know, he's sort of looking at you got a nice cushion in the Central, you know, it's a American League opponent. This is for the series. Let's try to build on this. And, you know, I think he manages these this way when it makes some sense.
Yeah.
Versus like, I don't think he's going to do this in, you know, the first game of a series.
It's going to be hard to ever doubt this team again. I mean, after 2-3 run ninth inning performances within a few days of each other, both Sunday and today. I mean, I feel like they're always in the game.
So don't they only have, I think, what, 3 or 4 total walk-off wins, and 2 of them have come in the last 3 days?
Yeah.
4 days?
Yeah.
So you can't count them out.
No, yeah. No.
Well, and I don't know if we're ready to jump into that too, but like, that's kind of what I was texting you guys earlier, and just like the excitement of like going into a late inning and knowing that at the very least they're going to put together some good at bats and put some pressure on to stay in the game, and they did that today. And like, I was just so pumped by, you know, Rizzo coming up, and like, the baseball move is you put Rizzo on, awesome, like, whatever. I mean, I don't disagree with that from the Marlins side, but then you get Zobrist come up, like, basically going to give you like the best at bat of any guy in this lineup, and to be put into that position based on how they built this roster,
yeah,
based on the experience and how it was all laid out, it just worked out perfectly. And it was just exciting to know that at very least they're just going to put in the best at bat in that situation and give them a chance, and it worked out again.
Yeah, well, so I listened to the last inning, the last half of the ninth inning in the car, and I was with my brother-in-law, and after they walked Rizzo, I told him, I said, you know what? He's going to walk. He's going to walk Zobrist, because he had struggled with command earlier in the inning. And then you have to throw 4 pitches not towards home plate. And I think it's just tough to come back and do that. And that's one reason that I really don't want to see them go to the automatic intentional walk, where they can just kind of say, okay, we're walking this person. I like that, the fact that they have to throw those pitches, because sometimes it is really hard for a pitcher to come back and throw strikes when they're so, you know, it's ingrained in closers to throw strikes and or in relief pitchers. But when that happened, I was like, oh man, I think we might get this, because I don't think he's going to be able to throw strikes, and sure enough, he didn't. And yeah, the Cubs had the perfect guy at the plate to take those pitches, but all of them in that, in, you know, I mean, it was just Montero leading today's game off, you know, that in that inning with a double, and then Baez got a single, And then, let's see. I'm trying to remember the order that they were. Was that when Caesar came in?
Yeah, Caesar pinch hit for.
Yeah, but then, like, even when Bryant struck out, I mean, he was down 0-2, and then worked it back to a full count, and really, strike three should have been ball four. And so it's just, and so my brother-in-law, he's here from Houston visiting, and as we were watching that game, I told him, I said, you know, it's just so much fun to see such young players, because I mean, he kind of he follows the Astros living in Houston, and so we were kind of talking about some of the similarities with the Astros and the Cubs and how the two teams have kind of been put together and everything like that. And he was saying that in watching Astros games, he doesn't see their young players taking those like real disciplined at bats like we were seeing the Cubs do tonight. So,
and you know, I was actually patrolling around just looking at, like, I was looking for Fowler numbers, and it surprised me to find out that pitches per plate appearance leader is actually Addison Russell. And Bryant, I think, is second on the team.
Wow.
In pitches per plate appearance. And then Fowler is, I think, third. And they're all in the top 20 in baseball.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really surprising to know that Russell, like, so, yeah, these young guys are doing it too.
So, sticking on this this Marlins series, we probably shouldn't overshadow Kyle Hendricks. I mean, I think it would be, I think we could kind of do it with the exciting wins that they've had this week, but man, he sure looked good.
Yeah, I think it would be a mistake to breeze over Kyle's performance, but he's coming off that complete game shutout and, you know, typical Hendricks performance where he still gave up, I think, 7 hits. But, you know, he scatters them, he limits damage. That's really what he does. I mean, he's not going to overpower anybody. And he just, I mean, he was just hitting his spots. It was kind of incredible. And, you know, he's kept up what we've seen him do. And so let's see. I'm looking through some of his numbers in his last 5 starts. So he actually had one relief appearance in July. So there's really 6 appearances, but 5 starts in July and August. He's now 4-1. And he's given up just 3 earned runs for a 0.79 ERA since July started. And he's given up just 1 home run. So, again, it limits the damage. He's just been so good lately. It's kind of like the Arrieta second half rise last year, but, you know, just such a different style that it's hard to compare the two.
Right.
And he's been especially good at Wrigley. He's 8-1 with a 1.19 ERA at Wrigley, but just 2-6 with a 3.75 on the road. That's the only sort of concern that jumps out at me. But, you know, even 3.75 on the road isn't horrific. But when you contrast that with how good he is at Wrigley, maybe it's a slight concern. But, you know, anytime your number 5 starter is this good, he's now 2nd in all of baseball with a 2.2 ERA. So, he trails just Kershaw. So he's putting himself in the hunt for awards. Not that we really care that much about that now, but just to be talking about your number 5 starter as a potential Cy Young candidate, or at least inserting his name in the conversation, is kind of wild. And then to just have his personality and his demeanor to go along with it, it's just really cool.
So here's my question to you guys. If the playoffs started this week, Who are your 3 starters? Who's your number 1? Well, okay, so let me jump in before you answer. So I posed this question in the form of a poll on our Twitter. And so there were 337 votes, and the results are, so this is who would be the number 1. 61% said Arrieta, 20% said Lester, but 19% said Hendricks. So just one more percentage point, Lester over Hendricks.
Yeah, so this is, again, it's hard because of these situational numbers that it, to me, knowing the scenario, like, where does the series start? You know, is it starting at home, on the road? And I think that affects it slightly. I think if the series starts at Wrigley, I definitely consider Hendricks.
So Hendricks is your number 1.
I guess I don't put as much stock in like the order once the playoff starts as I do the situation. You know, like what's the matchup versus the team? Is it home or away? Because nobody cares. Like it's not the opening day start. I mean, people care, but it's not like you're starting opening day and it's just this big like ceremony of opening day starter. It's who makes the most sense in the situation. At Wrigley right now, I don't think you can argue with 8-1 and a 1.19 ERA.
Yeah.
Like if this series starts at Wrigley, I think you have to consider him. And honestly, maybe Lester number two. And because Arrieta has been, he's been struggling.
Okay. Let me tell you why I would pick Arrieta, Lester, Hendricks. Is because I think that the it's like Jake can have a slightly off night and still pitch very effectively, but the margin for error for Hendricks is not as large. And so if he is a little off on his command, the other team can do a ton of damage. Whereas, you know, if Lester or Jake are off, there's more of a chance that they're going to do a decent job anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought process.
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree with you.
I wouldn't disagree with you, but just to
I think I don't really know what my answer is. I'm going to agree with you, Andy. However, I liked the score tweeted this. It was Joe Maddon talking about if Kyle Hendricks would start game three of a playoff series. So even if he would just be able to work his way into the rotation in a playoff series. And he said, baseball has a cruel and weird way of answering its own questions. And I think that's right. I think like that doesn't necessarily mean injury. It can also mean through at the end of a season. If somebody's kind of run out of gas, like we saw Arrieta do in the playoffs this year or last year. I mean, you know, if you see something like that happening, then that means maybe you don't stick with someone just because they're your number one. And I think that Maddon and the Cubs front office, I think that they're going to go with the pitcher that gives them the best chance to win. I don't think they are the ones that are going to be like, well, nope, Jake's our number one. He's given up 7 runs in his last 2 outings, but we're sticking with him. He's our number one, unless it was like, well, you know, if you look at the splits and how this team is done against him, then I think we have a good chance. I just think that he's right. Baseball does have a weird way of answering its own questions, and sometimes it's cruel, but sometimes it's just weird, I guess.
That's my answer with Hendricks is my way of attempting to be impartial and like sort of removing emotion from the decision, because as fans, that's what we do. That's what we should do. Emotion should play into your decision. And but at the same time, like you just look at the numbers. Sometimes you have to trust, you know, what the baseball numbers are showing you. And we put so much emphasis on sabermetrics and advanced metrics and all that stuff. And then when you get into the playoffs, it's like, well, how could we possibly do that? Because this guy's our number one, you know. And I don't disagree with that, but I just sort of think like sometimes you have to find the balance of those two things. And I think another kind of important point is like we've sort of all been waiting for Hendricks to hit his end and like, well, is this going to continue? Well, you look at his career numbers and it's a short career, but he's now 25-16 with a career 3.08 ERA in 66 games. So far, he's not been anything drastically different from what he is now. He's not been this dominant in the past, but he has been incredibly effective. So I don't know. I think if you're waiting for him to fall on his face, I don't know that he will.
Yeah. I don't know either. But it's good to see him. I think at this point in the season where you kind of think, you know, we kind of talk about first half Hamill and second half Hamill. And I think this is the point in the season where you do see some starting pitchers just kind of run out of steam. And it's really nice to see him pitching, so strong here in August or July and August. So,
Yeah.
Sticking on the Marlins series, can I just say how much I appreciate all of the Javier Baez love out there? It's just so beautiful to see.
It's kind of hard to hate on him right now.
Oh, man. And I kind of feel like we've seen Javi fall into some bad habits at the plate. But I think that these are changes that I think we'll see him make adjustments and make changes quickly. Because I think given the adjustments that he made in the first place and him seeing the results of those changes so far this season, I think that we will see him kind of correct. I mean, it seems like he's kind of had some trouble with, you know, stuff low and away and off speed stuff. And I think he's kind of, he maybe has fallen into a few bad habits with that, but man, that defense, good Lord. I mean, two outs in the ninth inning of Tuesday's game. If you guys remember, I mean, we spent so much time talking about the other two, but that's Chapman came in and it was a 3-2 game. And I mean, two of those outs were because of him. And I know that Bryant does not make that first out, the little roller that he barehanded. And I don't think that Bryant makes the third out either, which is, you know, where he was playing kind of deep and threw it across the infield to get the runner. But I don't think Bryant gets either one of those outs. And that game looks a lot different if there's one out and runners on first and second in the ninth. But because Baez was playing third base, game over, save Chapman. So,
yes.
And speaking of Chapman, his FIP since coming over to the Cubs is 0.13. Thought that
there's only been like two balls in play.
So
that's crazy.
Anything else?
He did hit 104.9 on that one, and Len on the broadcast said just. He's like, that's the fastest pitch I've ever seen in person.
Yeah.
And I thought that was super cool because it was like he was kind of a fan in that moment of like, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah. And he had two 104 mile per hour pitches back to back, I think.
Yeah. Those two pitches are in his like top 10 fastest this season.
It's kind of funny because he came in and I think his first pitch was maybe like 98 or something or 99. And I was like, oh, he doesn't have it. I was like, all of a sudden I got nervous. I was like, oh no.
Yeah. There were a couple there that were like 98, 99. And then it was back to the top. Homeboy nonstop.
Change up.
So anything else you guys want to say about this Marlins series?
I wanted to briefly mention the two other starters, Lackey and Hamill, pitched well. I'm not going to say too much about them. Hamill got lifted after only 80 pitches, and he was pretty unhappy about it. But the situation kind of called for a pinch hitter. He was placed on the bereavement list today due to an unspecified family emergency and will be out 3 to 7 days. So I don't know what that means for his next start. It's supposed to be on Tuesday. So if he's more toward the 7-day range, they're going to have to do some sort of shuffling.
Well, and it may not be a bad idea just for him to skip a start. I mean,
I think
we might see pitchers skipping starts for a variety of reasons here.
For sure. And that would be actually probably in their best interest. But so Lackey had a pretty good outing today, but there are a couple things I thought were hilarious about him today. The first thing in the, I think it's the Kerry Muscat write-up, it reads, in the third inning after Gordon bunted for a hit, Lackey began jawing at the Miami second baseman. And then he got mad because I bunted, Gordon said. I don't know what he wanted me to do. That's my game. It's kind of like how Lackey is like this irrational competitor that will just like start like going after a guy just for like doing what he does.
Did you see his quote after the game?
Yes, I was going to mention his quote after the game. He was asked about expectations for the team. And his quotation, this is Sadhav Sharma's quoting this. It says, fair expectations. We're trying to win the World Series. I didn't come here for a haircut. You know what I mean? We're trying to get it on. I came here for jewelry.
I actually heard that interview on the radio. It's amazing.
He didn't.
And you can hear him breathing into the microphone the whole time.
Oh, my gosh. You could hear him huffing on the microphone.
Oh,
so heavily. All throughout that press conference.
And then the flip side, I do remember though, when that question got asked, I'm like, who asked, like, sometimes the questions that get thrown out there, like, what are fair expectations? You're going to give that to Lackey? That's a total softball. You're trying to get that quote out of him. Like, what do you think he's going to say? I hope we make the playoffs.
Well, you don't expect him to say that he didn't come here to get his mane trimmed.
He wants some jewelry.
Anyway,
he wants a blanket.
Really entertaining and worth mentioning. One last thing too I wanted to mention was Wood playing left field after he makes that catch at the wall, tries to double off the runner at first. Yes, I loved that so much. And he made a really strong throw to first.
And then who said when he came into the net, Ross was like, hit the cutoff man. And then they said, we can't repeat what Wood said in return, but it started with an F, I think, and ended with a Q.
He flashed a cannon there. I mean, it makes sense given that he's a pitcher, but I just thought that was hilarious that he didn't bother hitting the cutoff man, just totally threw it on, you know, in the air to first base from the wall.
Oh man. Today's episode is brought to you by Casper. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Ivy and using the promo code Ivy. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly to you, the consumer. I don't have a Casper mattress, but I know someone that does, a listener and a frequent commenter and attendee of our live events, and he's been on the podcast before, Bob from Moline. So here's what Bob has to say about his Casper mattress.
Hello, Ivy and V listeners. This is Bob from Moline to talk to you about Casper Mattress. Casper Mattress is the best mattress out there. I've had one for about 6 months now, and it's the best sleep I've gotten, period. It's a combination of springy latex and memory foam, which makes for a nice, cool, comfortable sleep. And I'm not just saying that. I'm not being paid to say this. I own one and I like it, so I wanted to share it with you guys. It is the best mattress out there. And if you don't like it, you have 100 days to try it out, to do a sleep test for 100 days. And if you don't like it, you can send it back, but there's no way you're not going to like it. So I highly recommend checking out Casper Mattress.
So Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Time Magazine called it one of the best inventions in 2015, and Casper has free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada, and you can try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and they'll refund you everything. And Casper mattresses are made in America. So Casper is giving listeners of our podcast $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/IVMV and using the promo code IVY. Terms and conditions apply. Well, I thought this might be a good time to check in on some prospects. And in previous years, we've spent a lot of time on prospects. For a couple of years, all we were talking about was Bryant, Schwarber, Baez, Soler, Russell, Almora, all these guys. And so with these guys up with the Cubs and the Cubs being an exciting team to watch, we haven't spent much time on prospects in the minors. So we're going to go through and look how some of the top prospects are doing this season down in the farm system. So I'll get us started by looking at South Bend. I guess the first guy that stands out has to be Eloy Jimenez. And I'll start this off by telling a story that kind of shows you how certain prospects just stand out. And Jimenez is one of those guys. So my brother, he doesn't pay a great deal of attention to baseball. He usually tries in April, but then has given up by tax day probably. So he had the opportunity to see South Bend play in Clinton a month or so ago, and he sent me a text and said, what's up with this Jimenez guy? I think that just kind of shows you that even somebody who doesn't pay a great deal of attention to baseball can kind of identify someone that is at a different caliber of player or in an entirely different level. And so I've had the opportunity to see him play at spring training. And I guess what's always stood out to me is, and I guess me being someone who doesn't really have any idea on how to scout or judge prospects, but he looks like a slimmer Jorge Soler to me. So he's now the number two prospect in the system, and he is just tearing it up in low A in the Midwest League. He's hitting, he's number two in the league in batting average, just barely. He's almost, he's only like 2 points behind the leader. He's hitting .347 on the season, and he's leading the league in slugging and OPS. His OPS is 67 points higher than the next closest person in the entire league. He leads the league in doubles. He's hitting for power, 12 home runs. And I guess if you want to criticize him for something, he doesn't take a lot of walks. His walk rate is about 5%. But he's hitting the ball really well, and he's just 19, which is young even for low A. In the last 30 days, he's hitting .416. And here's a split that kind of popped out to me. He's hitting .383 off righties. And as a right-handed batter with some power, that's really impressive. So, obviously, he is a guy to pay attention to. Will he be promoted by the end of the year? My guess would be yes, maybe. This front office in the past has liked having some of the top prospects on playoff teams, both for extra work and for the experience of postseason play. South Bend clinched a playoff spot, winning their division in the first half of the season. Myrtle Beach is leading their division right now. But if he does get left down in South Bend, I don't really think it's the end of the world. There's only a month left of the regular season. But it would be nice for him to get a little taste of high A this season, so that he can maybe start off there next year and kind of progress through the system, escalated rate. Is that what I'm looking for? A faster
accelerated
rate. Accelerated. I was like, escalated doesn't seem right. Yeah. Thank you. And really the entire South Bend outfield is stacked this season. Donnie DeWeese and Eddie Julio Martinez have been in the outfield with Jimenez. DeWeese was recently promoted to Myrtle Beach. But I mainly wanted to focus on Jimenez. There's also some pitchers that are in the top 30 Cubs prospect list. Carson Stans, Sands, Justin Steele. Neither have had remarkable seasons, but there's just so much development to be done with pitchers in the minors, especially in the lower levels. And it seems like we've been talking about, you know, it just seems like these guys have been in the system for a long time. It really hasn't been that long, but it is going to take them a while to go through the system. And I think at this point, you just kind of hope that one or two of them pan out to be, worthy MLB pitchers, because looking down the road, pitching doesn't look great for the Cubs. If you kind of start thinking about contracts and who will be done when and how old certain players will be at certain points. So having some of these prospects, these pitching prospects, pan out would be a good thing. And I think it would help the Cubs quite a bit and not force them to go out and spend a ton of money on free agents. And I haven't even started looking ahead to, you know, what the free agent classes are going to look like in 2 or 3 years. But so, yeah, that's South Bend. Kurt, how about Myrtle Beach?
One of those pitching. Well, I guess I should start with the obvious that Myrtle Beach went from a pretty exciting minor league team to not so exciting lately. And that was with the trade of Gleyber Torres to the Yankees. So we won't talk about him. He had been having a nice season at Myrtle Beach. Donnie DeWeese has recently been moved up. Ian Happ had been there for a while. He's been bumped up to Tennessee. So what did look like kind of a cool roster and maybe a nice prospect list to look at. It isn't as exciting, but as you mentioned, Donnie DeWeese is there. He's having a pretty nice offensive season. And he's only played 9 games in Myrtle Beach, but as a whole, his minor league year this year is looking pretty good. He's hitting like over .275 with 9 home runs. So, you know, he's kind of on track for what was expected of him. Another one of those pitching prospects that you kind of hinted at before is Trevor Clifton, also having a nice year. But like you said, it's really hard to evaluate lower level starters because you're just looking for them to progress, do their work, work on their, you know, whatever pitches or whatever mechanics they might be working on. But, you know, the numbers look good. ERAs in the minors can get a little inflated, and his is like 3.5 and he's 5-7, which, you know, those don't particularly mean a lot, but he's progressing nicely and he's had some really nice outings. So that's one to watch. He's, you know, I think he's number 7 or 8 on the top 30 prospect list. So those are a couple guys in Myrtle Beach to keep an eye on. But like I said, it's not the most exciting roster to look at now that so many moves have happened, the trades, and then guys get bumped up to Tennessee.
Yeah, so Tennessee, speaking of Tennessee, I'm glad you mentioned it because we should talk about that a little bit. And then also speaking of pitching, Dwayne Underwood Jr. is a highly ranked prospect at Tennessee. And he had a really rough go of it in 13 games started. He went 0-5. And perhaps the reason for that is because his elbow was barking at him. He eventually got an MRI on it, and they discovered that there was no structural damage. It was just inflamed. So he's currently kind of working his way slowly back to health from that. But I'm guessing the reason his numbers were so bad is because he was having trouble with his elbow. Just a couple other guys. Ian Happ, you guys mentioned, is now up at Tennessee, and he's only had 140 at bats so far. But he's, you know, scuffled a little bit. He's hitting .286 with a .315 OBP and .400 slugging. So he struck out 30 times in those 140 at bats with only 6 walks. Finally, Jacob Hanneman is at Tennessee. And he's had a kind of mediocre season at the plate, but he has stolen 26 bags. So he's having some success on the base paths.
And then Iowa.
Yeah, so Iowa's kind of a strange one to talk about because we've seen a lot of these guys up in the majors. You know, Almora.
Are you going to talk about the hot prospect, Munenori Kawasaki?
You know, maybe I could touch on Trevor Cahill's AAA performances. Adelmoren being there for a while. Yeah, I mean, I feel weird going too much into detail about Almora's AAA performance when we've seen enough of him at the major leagues. I think we all know where he stands. Candelario made a brief appearance with the Cubs this year as well. He's looked really good at AAA. Did not look so good when he came up with the Cubs. He had been hitting for a pretty good average. Decent amount of power with a handful of home runs. So he looked good. Hopefully he can. He looks like he's maybe needs a little more time at AAA. Let's see. Gerardo Concepcion. We saw him for a little bit as well. I think there's a guy you'll probably see in September to add to the bullpen. And, you know, he's really come on late. He's had a few rough outings lately, but I think all of us were a little bit surprised that he's made so much recent progress and that he was called up this year. Let's see who else. Pierce Johnson has been really rough down in Iowa this year. He's 1-6 with a 7.60 ERA and in 11 starts. So he looked like a guy who could potentially start in the future. He's not showing it this year. We'll see if that, how that pans out, but hasn't looked so good this year after having a really good year in Tennessee last year. So hopefully you can get back to that. And this is just a blip. I think that's everybody that I want to talk about on AAA.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about Kawasaki.
No, that's okay. Before we close this thing up, we did get a listener question. I kind of threw it in my notes, but I didn't share it with you guys. But it's not anything I think you have to prepare for. And this was sent in by Carrie, who is in the live chat right now, I believe. And she said, "It's clear these last few wins that our guys have an advantage when playing at Wrigley. Joe even noted in today's post game, what are your thoughts on the All-Star game being the decision maker for home field for the World Series? I used to think it was nice and it meant something, but lately I've been thinking it sucks not to reward the team with the best record with this. Maybe that's my opinion now, that it's us who might miss out on that, but I wanted to know your thoughts.
I absolutely agree. I hate it. I think it's ridiculous, especially if, let's say, the Cubs end the regular season with the best record in baseball. To have that team not have home field advantage in the World Series just is absurd to me, especially given that this just, like, I don't know, forced meaningfulness of the All-Star game is just silly to me.
You said it really well. I totally agree, too. And I think it should be the team with the best record.
Yeah, I think if you're I mean, I agree. I think it should be the team with the best record. I think, like, if you're going to do it, I don't know. If it's not, let's say for some reason it just can't be the team with the best record, like for some reason that's not an option, then I say just make it every other year. I don't like it that the strength of the teams in your league determine whether or not you get home field advantage. I think that's stupid. So I absolutely think it should be. Of course, what's funny is I never really thought it was that big of a deal until now, like she said.
Well, so. It certainly amplifies it, and because of where the Cubs are right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that's totally out of their control, determining something that's pretty important.
Yeah. Although I will say this, like, yes, there is home field advantage. There is such a thing. On the other hand, I have faith that this team can overcome many things. And I mean, look at the fact that they went into Pittsburgh in a one game play-in game and took care of business there. I mean, this is a team that can win on the road, and it's a manager that can manage on the road. And so it's not like I feel like if that is what could derail this season. I just think that it would be nice if they had home field advantage, but
If you listen to today's game, you know that home field advantage is a thing. Just listening to the fans in today's game. And yeah. Madden started out his press conference today acknowledging the fans and their role in the win today. I agree with what you say, Corey, is that the Cubs are certainly capable of winning on the road. Sorry I stepped on you there, Kurt. What were you going to say?
I don't completely remember, but... I think, to Corey's point, I think sort of like random alternation, not random, but like alternating sort of would be more fair than trying to let the All-Star game decide it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I prefer regular season because to me in baseball, like even though your division might be weak, you're still playing 162 games. And I think the best teams rise to the top. And so I think that, at least in baseball, 162 games is a fair assessment of of the best team versus the second best team and so on.
That's small sample size. Yeah.
I think we need to see about 300 to be completely certain.
And then we'll have a three-game playoff series to decide it.
Right. But then, I mean, you can have play a 300-game season, but God still chooses the Cardinals. So... All right, Andy, do you have a Rube Waddell story for us?
Yeah, tonight I wanted to talk about Rube's love life a little bit.
Oh, man, we're going there.
A little sketchy. In 1899, he married his first wife, Florence, and 2 years later, she divorced him on the grounds of gross neglect of duty. And it comes from an article entitled Rube Waddell by Dan O'Brien. So anyway, he neglected his duty with Florence. And so that marriage lasted 2 years. In 1903, he was married again for the second time. And this relationship lasted a lot longer. It lasted about 7 years. But according to O'Brien's article, the couple only infrequently lived together, and Mrs. Waddell often had her husband jailed for non-support. So he was very neglectful. That was the same year that he actually climbed into the stands to beat up a spectator as well. A guy O'Brien describes as a known gambler who had baited him. But then later on in 1908, he was accused of assaulting his parents-in-law. So I don't know what happened to make him want to go after his wife's parents. But 2 years after that, in 1910, he married wife number three. And I think that he was married to her until he died. But O'Brien describes that also as a tempestuous marriage. So it sounds like Rube wasn't a good guy when it came to love. There are plenty of stories of him being a good guy, but there are plenty of stories of him being a bad guy as well. And I guess
Did you say he was the one wife? Was he like arrested, or just the grounds for divorce was?
He was in jail. You said he was thrown in jail.
Oh, for non-support. Perhaps Lackey could be arrested for non-support. Well,
that's the funny thing is, Andy, when you tell these Rube Waddell stories, when I'm picturing it, I see John Lackey. Like when you say, you know, somebody baited him and he went into the stands and beat somebody up, I see John Lackey. I can't help it.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I don't think that's a bad touchstone for Rube.
Oh man. Okay, so good stories, Andy. Thanks for taking us to his love life. I it's nice to mix in some non-baseball Rube stories. I appreciate that.
Even though most of them have non-baseball aspects to them.
That's true.
Like fire engines and stuff. That's
true. So the weekend at the lake is coming up next weekend. I'm really excited, and you've all heard us talk about it several times on here, but I did want to mention, I talked a couple weeks ago or maybe a month ago about it being the Perseid meteor shower. And Lauren in our Patreon group, she mentioned that they said that there's supposed to be more meteors this year than typical, and it could be as many as 200 an hour. So, man, the Perseid meteor shower is moving up the list as far as like things I'm really looking forward to about the weekend. And I'll say that like I've been out swimming there with the kids and stuff, and that lake is like bath water right now. It's perfect. So, and next weekend, is the weekend at the lake. And if this is the first you're hearing about it, then you can go to ivmv.com/lake to learn more about it.
/junior lake.
right.
Just kidding.
He got DFA'd, I think, from the...
Yeah, he did. He did. All right, so that does it for this episode. It was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. Patreon is how we pay the podcasting bills and we keep this show running. We do have some new supporters to thank. Let me flip over to that. We have, let's see... Travis in West Lafayette, Indiana, Danielle in Rochester, New York, Phil in Indianapolis, and there's one more, and my everything just locked up on me. So whoever the next person is, we'll get you next episode. So yeah, it's how we pay the podcasting bills. It's how we keep this show running. It's how we upgrade equipment and fund our live events. If you like what we're doing here and you want to help us keep it going, then visit our Patreon campaign. Pledging levels start at just $1, and it's just pocket change, and it helps us tremendously. There's perks that you can get, stickers, posters, pint glasses. Check it all out at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. Or you can go to IVMV.com, and there's a Patreon link on the right side of the page. So the Cubs have Thursday off, and then they have another goofy one-series West Coast road trip. They had one of those earlier in the year, so here's another one. They go to Oakland for the weekend, and we'll be back on Sunday night to discuss this series with the A's. And until then, go Cubs!